Well, yeah, that was very brave, Tim. Great job, mate. That was just for him to get up and share so openly and honestly. I think it's really important. It's so important to walk in the light together. So that was great, Tim. Tim actually asked if I just share this section, just particularly from kind of a psychological perspective related to understanding and managing internet pornography and how that kind of works. Because unless some of those factors are taken into consideration, to be honest, it can be quite difficult to make progress. God has made us unitary beings. We're physical beings, we're spiritual beings, we're emotional beings, we're psychological beings, but he's made us unitary beings. Now, you can look at issues from different perspectives, but actually many times all of those things are actually at play. So as Tim shared a fair bit from a spiritual perspective, he's asked me if I'd share from that kind of a psychological perspective as well. So that's kind of what I'm going to be sharing a little bit about. But actually, Philip asked if before I'd probably get into proper the handout, which you have there, that we just kind of have a bit of a discussion about, well, what is pornography or internet pornography? And to be brutally honest, that question is a little trickier than you might imagine. Definitely in the literature, when you start thinking about these issues, there's probably two kinds of characteristics that make porn porn, I would say. Yes, of course, there is going to be some kind of a sexualized material, but to be honest, pornography can be almost anything. Like it says up there, it can really vary from person to person. Pornography is really determined by the intent of the consumer or the person. For some people, that might be any or all of those kinds of things. So what pornography is actually can be quite varied. It really depends in some ways about the intent of the person or of myself of what I'm going to that material for. But usually it is involving some kind of sexualized material which brings about my own sexual stimulation and usually includes masturbation or to the point of orgasm. Usually those factors are involved as well, but that's kind of what we're talking about. And the literature is really very unanimous about we call it correlates of pornography. These are some of the very predictable outcomes or other things that occur in life for many people in related to pornography use. Not all people get trapped into these kind of areas, but definitely, looking at groups, these things certainly come out. Definitely there's an increased callousness towards women particularly and viewing other people as sexual objects. There's misperceptions of exaggerated sexual activity and deviance in the general population, so our expectations of what it's really like changes. There is increased risk for sexual compulsions and addictions, not for everyone, but certainly that is true. Distorted perceptions and expectations about sexuality. Developing some tolerance towards sexually explicit material. Our sexuality is really quite malleable in many ways. And so there can be a tolerance that can develop that leads to often more increased severity or bizarre or other material to get the same initial buzz. There can be often decreased satisfaction with a partner's sexual performance, a partner's affection, a partner's physical appearance. There can be abandoning of the goal towards sexual exclusivity with a partner, trivialization of rape, developing negative body image, especially for women, increased sense of feeling betrayed by a person's spouse or cheated by partners. There's a whole raft of things, actually. There's more, but there's just a bit of a taster. And that's very, very common in the literature that's out there. So what is porn? Actually, you know what? Our sexuality is quite malleable and porn can really be anything. It's really my intent that I look at it. Maybe it's a target catalogue, maybe it's something really explicit, but actually there can be an intent that combines with the material itself. But my real interest tonight is to speak about, well, what are some ways, what are some mechanisms that are at place in the use of pornography or internet pornography or IP? I'll probably use IP a bit more just because it's a bit simpler to say. And so to go to the model for understanding what goes on when we use internet pornography And how can we use that understanding to help me, or to help me work with other people who I'm in relationship with, to help them take some steps in change? So I'd like to look at a model about habitual IP use, and it's the ABCs, of IP use. So really, the A there stands for antecedents, or the triggers that trigger an interest to use. B stands for beliefs that usually accompany using porn. And C then is the consequences, really how I feel after using and then what I do as a result. The reality is all behaviour exists for a reason, particularly long-term behaviours. They have strong reasons why they keep on going. And Tim actually said it. One of the first steps on the journey is actually to own up and kind of identify, what purpose is this serving for me? The reasons why people start using internet pornography is usually quite different for why we continue to use. And so considering that question is often an important place to start. But once that's understood, then the challenge is to consider what's the purpose it's serving, and then actually how do I meet those purposes but with more healthy behaviours? Sometimes the needs aren't the bad thing, it's actually how I'm looking to meet them. And so trying to learn different ways to appropriately meet felt needs. So in short, what we need to do, if that's the process of what happens, we kind of need to understand and intervene at each of those three steps in the process. And that's what's on your handout there. And so if you're looking for some, well, what's some practical steps to move, walk away with, or to go through someone with, that handout pretty much are some of those practical steps. But to kind of discuss that rather than just discuss a model, I wanted to talk about an analogy that kind of really helps me make sense of what goes on in our brains when we use IP. When we're born, really, in our brains, there's a bit of a tangled mass of neurons, but as thoughts and actions are repeated over and over, neurons eventually group into pathways. And those pathways become well-defined as they're repeatedly activated over and over again. Kind of like if you've ever gone four-wheel driving through the bush. When you first go into the bush there, you kind of got to go pretty slow because there's no real tracks. But on the way back, actually, you can go a little bit faster because you've actually started to forge a connection between point A and point B. You've started to make that kind of connection. You've got some tire marks to follow. You can go a little bit faster. And if you repeatedly go down those same tire marks, pretty soon it begins to form a track. And as time passes by, because there's a track that's forming, the frequency of driving down those tracks becomes easier and you become able to do it faster. At some point, usually then, the road gets sealed and becomes bigger and stronger, allowing vehicles to travel faster and faster. And now as soon as the driver enters the road, it's familiar, the neurons, they fire faster and faster and faster. Behaviour becomes almost quite automatic, and eventually it becomes like a six-lane superhighway in the brain where vehicles travel very rapidly. That's an important key to understanding the struggle to overcoming problems with internet pornography. The less one fires up the pathway, the weaker the path becomes over time. But the reverse is true also. The more and more one fires up that pathway or use IP, the more entrenched those patterns become. So what's required, in turn looking to change the behaviour, is to create alternate and healthier patterns. Overcoming IP use isn't just concerned with stopping the problem behaviour, it's actually about creating a healthier life in other spheres, a healthier way about how do you actually overcome or meet these other needs in healthier ways so that a positive pattern of life is created rather than the one that's already become entrenched. We want to relearn new healthier ways to manage life that I have been using porn to manage with. So let's use that analogy to try to understand the ABCs in terms of the process of using porn and try to figure out, well, how do I then actually intervene on the path? Well, the first place to start is to think about what are the antecedents. The first part of the model is about antecedents to using, or the triggers that generate the urge or the thoughts to use. Triggers, what they're like, if you think about the highway, the superhighway, triggers are kind of like the signposts. Once you start thinking about the highway, it's very tempting to actually take a variety of turns that lead you eventually towards the on-ramp of the highway. Those triggers, however, are like the signs in suburbia that kind of start me kind of moving towards that. The Kurigawa triggers are important because they're in suburbia. I'm not there yet. Once you get on the on-ramp of a highway, it's pretty hard to get off, right? Same with actually using internet pornography. Once you're right there, it's very hard to stop. We need to stop earlier on when we're kind of out in the suburbs before we get to the highway. Broadly speaking, what are antecedents? Well, there's two types of antecedents. There's internal and external antecedents. Internal means the sources are within, while the external trigger is where there's something in the environment that starts the thoughts and feelings that lead to an urge to do the behaviour. And those triggers can really differ from person to person. But some of the very common kind of external triggers are things like this. There's the time of the day where I might be triggered to use. There might be explicit content, then that's a pretty obvious kind of trigger, whether it's in books or movies, social or other media, there's some kind of external visual trigger. Sometimes it's other people. Sometimes it's specific locations that kind of trigger an urge to use. The reality is, folks, it's internet porn seminars. Just talking about it tonight is a trigger, to be brutally honest. And so I'd encourage us just to be aware of that later on tonight. Even just talking about it can be a trigger for get our minds going. But for many people, it's not the external triggers that are the most powerful. Often can be actually it's the more internal triggers over time that become more powerful. Things like anger or loneliness or feelings of low mood in myself. Anxiety or stress, they're extremely common triggers for problematic acting out of any sort. Using pornography often includes an escape. It's an escape from negative feelings to this kind of calm, safe state in which there's some soothing or arousing hormones that are released in my brain. That's kind of what it gives, actually. But the problem is it's only for a short amount of time, and then I'm flooded with all those other negative emotions, which Tim shared about splitting of the sense of identity and all that kind of stuff. So it's important to start by actually thinking about what are the triggers that actually trigger me to actually start thinking about using. And we need to kind of think about what are some alternative plans for dealing with these triggers so I can meet these kinds of needs in a healthy way. And these are some examples of what I mean. So in terms of internal triggers, like a really important one is actually speaking it out. Getting in the light with other people, with other men, is really important. Talking about what's going on, trying to address that need without using is often engaging other people in healthy ways. Prayer support with others. Engaging in some other kind of enjoyable or constructive activity, which is going to be important too, because we want to actually positively shift mood in healthier ways than IP. Same with external triggers. Sometimes we need to think about avoidance or changing a schedule. You know, if I use most times in the morning or if I use most times in the night, how do I change up my schedule to make a difference there? Maybe just contacting supports early when I am triggered in some way. Or things like practicing thought stopping or some kind of cognitive techniques or bouncing eyes or these kinds of things. Just being aware is the first step. Once I'm aware, I then need to think about how to actually act in a different way to meet those needs or to address that issue. Antecedent triggers are things that generate the initial urge to use. As I said, they're like those signposts in suburbia of our everyday life that kind of direct us and lead us to the highway of using. The earlier you can identify a trigger and take action to promote turning away from the on-ramp, so to speak, the easier it is to manage ourselves in a healthier way. it's easier to avoid getting on the highway when you're three blocks out than it is when you're on the on-ramp. So that's triggers, a bit of discussion about triggers. That leaves us to discuss the on-ramp itself, and let me call that the beliefs. Because when we actually have been triggering for a while, it actually precipitates many thoughts and kind of beliefs. And usually they are the things that precede me using. What I mean by that, here are some common beliefs that people have that kind of justify me doing the behaviour. Things like this. You know, I'll only look, or I'll just have a quick look, or I'm not really hurting anyone. It's not like I'm having a real affair. I'm using it for education. I'm deadly serious. It takes the pressure off my spouse. I have no other choice. I deserve it because I've been working hard, or I've been let down, or I've had a really bad day, or I deserve it because I haven't used for 2 months now. So I deserve it. It'll make me feel better. It's the only way I can cope with my anger or my this or my that or my other. Now, on one level, what these, in some kind of twisted ways, they are somewhat logical and justified. But on other reasons, what they are, these are just rationalizations that part of our consciousness is using to try to seek to overcome our other convictions of not using. These are excuses that actually, they're habitual, that come into our thought, into our minds. These are the on-ramp. When I'm having these thoughts, man, I'm really close now. So better thoughts lead to better feelings. Therefore, when you want to intervene in this second step, I would say it's imperative that we wake up to what's really going through my mind, so that we can actually call out these lies for what they are. And one important way to do that is actually to use a thought log, or to use a journal, or to actually get the thoughts out of here onto some kind of a bit of paper. So on your handout there, there's two columns in green there about lies that I believe that keep me using, and truths and alternative thoughts. And I would really encourage people, we need to slow it down when we get to this level. So one thing to do, it might be just to get out a pen and write down what are those thoughts, and then to actually just kind of say, is this really true? And what's probably a better challenge? So for each one of those, we could work through what is a challenge for each of those. I'm only looking. Well, you know what? Only looking is making that neural pathway even thicker. Further, there's a raft of moral concerns that these are real people, many of whom have been exploited, sexually abused, or have no real choice about being in the industry. It's not like I'm having a real affair. Well, that rationalization is not true for those people that I'm really in a relationship with. Many times, women, the people I'm in a relationship with, they feel like it is having an affair, to be honest. And you know what? Jesus in Matthew 5 has something to say about lust of the eyes as well. So there's some issues with that one. Yeah. Also, what that's doing is it is impacting my intimacy if I'm in a relationship with a significant other. It takes the pressure off my spouse. Well, you know what? This is not going to be growing my relationship with my spouse anyway. I've got no other choice. Well, that's not true. You probably have been. I have been successful in the past. There's many other people who are committed to helping me. I've got my accountability people. I've actually made difficult decisions to do difficult things before. I can. I deserve it. Let me tell you, this is not a reward. Just remember how I feel afterwards. It'll make me feel better. No, it won't. I use it for education. Well, let me tell you, IP does not actually increase your education. It actually creates distortions away from reality. Anyway, all I'm trying to say, we need to slow down those beliefs and call them out for the lie they are. This is just a thought. It's not true. It's not even me even. It is just a thought. So that's a helpful technique. But to be honest, when the urge is very strong, we need to do something probably physical as well. And I'll come to that when I'm trying to wrap it up. But finally, just to think about the sea, the way to intervene is at the sea level, which is about consequences. If a person who's been trying to resist using IP and then has a slip, particularly religious, highly religious people, the tendency is to binge. I've been trying really hard, keeping all my self-discipline going, like lifting weights. I'm really trying hard. And then eventually, sometimes actually, I drop the weights altogether. I'm exhausted and I have a slip. And sometimes when that occurs, I think, well, now that I've had a slip, it's all for nothing and I will binge. Now, often for people who are more religious, that's actually the pattern of internet porn use. It's kind of hard-worn, not using, and then I binge. Hard-worn, then I binge. However, what I want to suggest is actually a really important key at the C area, consequences, is to approach periods of high urges or even relapses as a slip to learn from. Don't buy the lie that now that I've had a slip, oh, it's all for nothing. That's just not true. Such events are actually best managed by reviewing the many steps that probably took place leading up to the urge and the slip. This is what it's like. Because to be honest, I just don't end up on the highway. I don't end up on the M1. Actually, usually things really build. And they can build over a period of 12 to even 48 hours. So, for example, I might wake up late and I'm late for work and I'm running and I'm trying to have breakfast and I spill my breakfast on my clothes and I feel like I'm an idiot and now I'm really kind of upset. And as I leave the house because I'm feeling like an idiot, I have an argument with my spouse and then I'm in the car and I'm feeling like I've done the wrong thing already, but the petrol light's on and so I've got to get some petrol and I stop at the petrol station, I go in to pay and out of the corner of my eye, I catch the girly magazine and then it's in my head. And now I'm at work and now I'm actually thinking about maybe I could use tonight. It's just in the thought that's there. And now I'm actually distracted at work. And now I'm still thinking about what happened with my spouse, the argument I had. And I'm starting to think about porn to try to distract me from feeling bad about that. And then my boss gets on my case this afternoon because I've been distracted all day. And then I come home and then I have I'm moody when I get home. And then I talk to my spouse. I maybe even make a request, you know, do you want to have sex tonight? And then she might rebuff me. Now that's it. So I'm going to go to my computer and I'm just going to check my email. Just happened to be checking my email. And then when I'm on my email, then there's actually, I click onto Facebook and then there's an ad in the corner of Facebook. And the next thing you know, I'm on that site. It's hard to not get on the M1 when you're down here in Mulgrave. It's a lot easier up near Wheelers Hill Secondary College, let me tell you. But do you see that pattern? Things don't just happen sometimes. Usually there's a build-up over time. And so that's quite important to be aware of. So a slip is a slip. Don't buy the lie. We need to go back and kind of review that. So my brief was really to kind of talk about how does using IP work from a psychological perspective? It's the ABCs. And actually, that can be helpful to think about where we can intervene. We need to intervene at each part. If you're just trying to willpower it out when you're on the on-ramp, let me tell you, the battle's probably gone. Actually, it's pretty hard. But there are some things to do. You've got to slow it down, but it's very, very hard. So let me just draw this to a close by just trying to pull out some general principles on the back page, and then there'll be time for some questions. So just some general principles to help people, to help myself. One, cut off easy access as much as possible. Just like Joseph, it's not the time to resist temptation with using this stuff. We've got to flee from it. So the first thing to do is cut off all kinds of easy access. Net nannies, whatever it takes. And usually whenever I say that, then people always say to me, oh yeah, but I know how to get around them. I don't care. You still have to make two or three more conscious volitional choices to get around something if it's in place. But if it's not in place, well, it's even easier. I would just say do something. Have accountability software. Just do something to cut off easy access. Move the computer into a living area. If my key times of using is early in the morning, then don't have anything in the bedroom. If my key times is late at night, well, maybe try to go to bed early. Just change something. Cut off easy access. Change your routines to reduce triggers. Just what I was saying. Don't feed fantasies. So when the thoughts come, just kind of like pigeons, if I keep feeding them, they'll keep coming back. And so, yeah, James 1 talks about that. You know, when tempted, each one is drawn away with our evil desires, and evil desire gives birth to blah, 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 it goes on. So just don't be careful about feeding fantasies. When thoughts come, they are just a thought. It's worthwhile saying that out loud. If a thought comes, this is not me, this is my brain chemicals. This is not me, this is just a thought. Don't feed fantasies. Be patient and resist feeling defeated. You know, it takes a long time to get into a really big pattern. And it doesn't change overnight. Like that neural pathway stuff is really true. So be patient. Resist feeling defeated. Pray and walk in the Spirit. Keep short accounts with God. Like Tim said, like we need to actually keep coming back to Him and receiving and experiencing His love and forgiveness. So the 4X challenge. If you want to walk away with a simple plan, here it is. Number one, have 4 accountability friends. 4 people who you can say, you know, I'm trying to deal with this in my life and I'm looking for some help for people to actually walk with me through this that I can contact when I need to. And you know what? Your friends will probably go, oh, thank you, I'm struggling with this too. 85% of 15 to 29-year-olds in Victoria use porn, males, on a daily to weekly basis. 85%. So we need to be speaking about this very openly. You probably need 4 reasons why I don't want to use that are positive. 4 really positive reasons why I don't want to use, and I want to keep them in the front of my mind. This is a positive vision for not using, not just what I don't want to have happen, but reasons why I want this to happen. And so 4 reasons why. 4 contingency plans. Like I was saying, when you're getting towards the on-ramp, you need some pretty good contingency plans. Peak craving for using is around 15 minutes, actually. That's when it feels most irresistible. So we need to distract ourselves for about 15 minutes, and I would say in a positive way. You want to out-stimulate the negative stimulation with positive stimulation. So you need to actually engage your mind or do something positive for 14 minutes. So for example, what could be one classic thing that I always talk about is the idea of spending 14 minutes. If you could just spend 14 minutes or 15 minutes thinking about someone who you really like, as in not romantically, but someone in your life who you care about. And why? What if I just spend 15 minutes thinking about a plan of something that I could do that would really just, you know, bless them. It just bring a smile to their face. Now, if you spend some time thinking about them and thinking about what you might do to do that, that kind of gets the dopamine springing in your brain, but in a positive way. And after 15 minutes thinking about that, then you think about using porn, it kind of doesn't feel right. It's a different way of thinking. So what I'm trying to say, we need 4 contingency plans that are going to be positive. Not just run around, I'm going to run 5Ks. Let me tell you, if I'm wanting to soothe myself at 11:30 at night, I am not going to want to run 5Ks. I want something positive then that will actually engage me in a positive way. 4 positive contingency plans, and then 4 weeks. 4 weeks to start a new road in my brain. After 4 weeks, I might think about 4 other different contingency plans. Well, I've really rushed through. I'm sorry for, it's probably a bit longer than I meant to be. I apologise for that. But just trying to give a bit of practical steps that one might take.